and do that, my clit brushes his pubic bone and intensifies the pleasure. My breasts are crushed against his rock-hard chest. He's so masculine, so fucking addictive. I kiss his neck and find his skin hot beneath my lips. He's burning up, his heartbeat hammering wildly against my breasts, and when I lift my head slightly and see his face, I'm held captive by his expression, the taut stretch of his features and the intense pleasure glittering in his eyes. I'm so focused on him that when the orgasm hits me, it catches me by total surprise. Oh! I cry out, sagging against him as a rush of sweet bliss races through my body. Garrett rubs my back as I gasp in pleasure. My sex contracts, milking his hard shaft, and his fingers dig between my shoulder blades as he curses. Hannah, oh fuck, baby, that's hot. I'm still catching my breath when he starts thrusting upward fast and deep, his hips snapping up as he fills me over and over again until finally he gives one final thrust and groans. His features tighten, dark brows drawn together as if he's in pain, but I know he's not. I kiss his neck again, sucking on his feverish flesh as he trembles beneath me, holding me so tight he traps all the air in my lungs. After we've both recovered and the condom is disposed of, Garrett crawls beside me and spoons me from behind. The heavy weight of his arm makes me feel safe and warm and treasured. So does the way he flattens his palm on my belly and absently strokes my naked flesh. His lips press into the nape of my neck, and I can honestly say I've never been more content in my life.
"Stay over tonight?"
he murmurs. "Can't," I murmur back. "I have to return Tracy's car."
"Tell her it was stolen,"
he offers.
"I'll vouch for you."
I laugh softly. No way she'd kill me. Garrett rests his cheek on my shoulder, rotating his hips so that his semi-hard cock rubs against my butt. He sighs happily.
"You've got the sweetest ass on the planet."
I have no idea how we got to this point. One day I was telling him to get lost. The next, I'm snuggling in bed with him. Life is so frickin' weird sometimes.
"Hey,"
he says a while later.
"You don't work Friday nights, right?"
"No, why?"
"We're playing Harvard tomorrow."
He hesitates.
"Maybe you want to come to the game?"
I hesitate too. I feel like I'm getting in over my head. I told him things tonight that I've never told anyone, and I'm pretty sure his confession about his father isn't something too many people know either. I don't want to ask him what it all means, though. I'm terrified that I'm reading too much into it. I'm terrified of making it real.
"You can take my Jeep,"
he adds, his voice gruff.
"I'll be riding on the bus with the team, so it'll just be sitting in my driveway anyway."
"Can I bring Allie?"
"Sure."
He kisses my shoulder and a shiver runs through me.
"Bring anyone you want. We could use the support, actually. Away games suck because nobody's ever cheering for us."
I swallow the odd little lump in my throat. "Okay, yeah, I guess I can do that." We go quiet again and I suddenly become aware of the hard ridge poking against my butt. His very obvious erection makes me laugh. "Really, dude? Again?" He chuckles.
"What was that you were saying about my stamina the other day? Shame on you, dude."
Still laughing, I roll over and plaster myself to his warm, hard body. "Round two?" I murmur. His lips find mine.
"Fuck yeah."
Chapter 30. Hannah.
"I can't believe this is happening,"
Dexter announces for about the millionth time from the back seat of Garrett's Jeep. Next to Dex, Stella sighs and voices her agreement, also for the millionth time.
"I know, right?
We're in Garrett Graham's car. Part of me is tempted to go carry Underwood on it and carve my name into his leather seats. Don't you dare, I order from the driver's seat. Relax, I won't, but I feel like if I don't leave my mark on this car, nobody will ever believe I was in it. Hell, I can't believe she's in it. I wasn't surprised when Allie jumped on the chance to come to Cambridge with me, since she's still on the quest for details about Garrett, but I was startled when Stella and Dex insisted on coming along. So far during this car ride, both of them have asked me at least twice if Garrett and I are dating. I've replied with my standard response, "We just hang out sometimes." But it's getting harder to convince even myself of that. We blast music for the rest of the drive. Dex and I sing along, and our harmonies are ridiculously awesome. Why didn't I ask him to duet with me, damn it? Allie and Stella can't stay on key to save their lives, but they join in for the choruses, and we're all in high spirits when I pull into the parking lot of the hockey center. I've never been to Harvard before, and I wish I had more time to explore the campus, but we're running late as it is, so I usher my friends inside because I don't want us to lose out on finding seats. I'm floored by how big and modern the arena is and how many people are here tonight. Luckily, we find four empty seats near the Briar team's side of the rink. We don't bother hitting up concessions since we ate a shit ton of corn chips in the car. Okay, so how does this game work again? Dexter asks me. I grin. Seriously? Yes, seriously. I'm a black kid from Biloxi, Han-Han. What the fuck do I know about hockey? Fair enough. As Allie and Stella chat about one of their acting classes, I give Dex a quick rundown of what he can expect. And yet when the players hit the ice, I realize my explanation hasn't done it justice. This is the first hockey game I've seen in person, and I don't expect the roar of the crowd, the deafening blare of the PA system, the lightning-fast speed of the players. Garrett's jersey is number 44, but I don't need to look at the number to know which black and silver-clad player he is. He's the center of the starting line, and the second the ref drops the puck, Garrett wins the opening faceoff and snaps the puck back to Dean, who I thought was a wing but is apparently a defenseman. I'm too busy watching Garrett to focus on any of the other players. He's mesmerizing. He's already tall without skates on, so the added height makes him appear massive. And he's so fucking fast I have a tough time keeping my gaze on him. He flies down the ice, chasing the puck that Harvard has stolen from us, and checking the opposing player like a pro. Breyer takes an early lead, thanks to a goal by a player the announcer refers to as Jacob Bergeron, and it takes me a second to realize he means Bertie, the dark-haired senior I met at Malone's. The clock on the scoreboard ticks down, but just when I think Breyer will shut out Harvard in the first period, one of the opposing forwards gets a fast snapshot past Sims to tie the game. As the period ends, and the players disappear into their respective tunnels, Dex pokes me in the ribs and says, "You know what? This ain't half bad. Maybe I should start playing hockey." "Can you skate?" I ask him.
"Nah, but it can't be that hard, right?"
I snort. "Stick to music," I advise. "Or if you're really determined to get into sports, play football. Breyer could use you." From what I've heard, our football team is putting up the worst record the school has seen in years, winning only 3 of the 8 games they've played so far. But Sean said they still have a chance to make it to the postseason if they, and I quote, "get their motherfucking shit together and start winning some motherfucking games." It makes me feel sorry for Bo, who I genuinely enjoyed talking to at the party. The moment I think about Bo, Justin's face swooshes into my head like a gust of wind. Shit. We have a dinner date Sunday night. How the hell did I forget about that? Because you were too busy having sex with Garrett? Yep, that's it. I bite my lip as I debate what to do. I haven't thought about Justin all week, But that doesn't trump the fact that I've been thinking about him all semester. Something drew me to him in the first place, and I can't just ignore that. Besides, I don't even know what's happening between me and Garrett. He hasn't brought up the whole boyfriend-girlfriend thing. I don't know if I want to be his girlfriend. I have a type when it comes to guys. Quiet, serious, moody, creative, if I'm lucky. Plays music is always a plus. Smart, sarcastic, but not in a snide way. Unafraid to show his emotions. Someone who makes me feel at peace. Garrett has some of those qualities, but not all of them. And I'm not sure peaceful is the accurate word to describe how I feel when I'm with him. When we're arguing or shooting wisecracks back and forth, it's like my whole body is wired with electricity. And when we're naked, it's like an entire 4th of July fireworks display going off inside me. I think that might be a good thing. Fuck, I don't know. My track record with guys isn't exactly a series of successes. What do I know about relationships? And how can I be certain that Justin isn't the guy I should be with if I don't go out with him at least once? So why do they call it the crease? Dex asks in fascination after the second period commences. And why does it sound so dirty? On my other side, Allie leans in to grin at Dexter. Babe, everything about hockey sounds dirty. Five-hole, poke-check, backdoor? She sighs. Come home with me one time and listen to my dad yell, jam it in, over and over again when he watches hockey, and then you can talk to me about dirty, not to mention uncomfortable. Dex and I laugh so hard we almost fall out of our chairs. Garrett. As the guys and I shuffle out of the guest locker room after the game, we're still riding the high of crushing the home team. Even though it's one of our sophomores who landed that last beauty of a goal that secured our win, I've decided that Hannah is my good luck charm and must now attend all of our games, because the last three times we played Harvard, we got our asses handed to us. We agreed to meet outside the arena after the game, and sure enough, she's waiting there for me when I walk outside. She's with Allie, along with a dark-haired chick I don't recognize and an enormous black guy who I'm amazed isn't on the football team, because he should be. Maxwell would come in his pants if he had a monster like that on his O-line. The moment Hannah spots me, she wanders away from her friends and walks over to me. Hey. She looks surprisingly shy, and she hesitates, as if she's not sure if she should hug or kiss me. I solve her dilemma by doing both, and as I brush my lips over hers, I hear a victorious, I knew it, echo from her friend's direction. The exclamation comes from the girl who isn't Allie. I pull back to grin at Hannah. Keeping us a secret from your friends, huh? Us? She raises her eyebrows. I didn't realize we were an us. Now is definitely not the time to discuss the status of our relationship, if it even is one, so I just shrug and say, how'd you like the game? It was intense. She smirks at me. I notice you didn't score a goal, though. Slacking much? My grin widens. I sincerely apologize for that, Wellesley. I promise to do better next time. You'd better. I'll score a hat trick just for you. How about that? My teammates shuffle past us and head for the bus waiting 20 feet away, but I'm not ready to leave Hannah yet. I'm glad you came. Me too. She sounds like she really means it. Are you busy tomorrow night? The team has another game tomorrow, but it's an afternooner, and I'm dying to get Hannah alone again so we can... Yeah. I thought we could hang out after I get back from... I stop talking when a shadow appears in my periphery vision, and my shoulders set in a tight line when I spot my father descending the front steps of the building. This is the point of the evening I dread. Time for the big nod, followed by the silent walk away.
As if on cue, I get the nod, but not the walk away. My father startles the shit out of me by saying, "Garrett, a word." His deep voice sends a chill up my spine. I fucking hate the sound of his voice. I hate the sight of his face. I hate every goddamn thing about him. Hannah's expression creases with concern when she sees my face.
"Is that?"
Instead of answering, I take a reluctant step away. "I'll be back in a minute," I mumble. My father is already halfway down the parking lot. He doesn't even turn around to check if I'm following him, because he's Phil fucking Graham, and he can't imagine someone not wanting to be around him. Somehow my stiff legs carry me in his direction. I notice several of my teammates lingering at the door of the bus watching us curiously. A few of them are visibly envious. Jesus, if they only knew what they were jealous of. When I reach him, I don't bother with pleasantries. I just scowl and speak in a terse voice. "What do you want?" Like me, he gets right to the point. "I expect you to come home for Thanksgiving this year." My shock manifests itself in the form of a sharp laugh. "No, thanks. I'll pass." "No, what you will do is come home." A dark look hardens his features. "Or I will drag you home." I genuinely don't know what's happening right now. Since when does he give a shit whether I come home or not? I haven't been back once since I left for Briar. I'm in Hastings during the school year, and I spend my summers working 60-hour weeks for a construction company in Boston and saving every last penny, which I then use to pay for rent and groceries because I don't want to take any more of my father's money than I absolutely have to. "Why the hell do you care what I do for the holidays?" I mutter.
"You're needed at home this year."
He's speaking through clenched teeth, as if he's enjoying this even less than I am.
"My girlfriend is cooking dinner and she requested your presence."
His girlfriend? I didn't even realize he had a girlfriend. And how fucking sad is it that I know nothing about my own father's life? The way he phrased it doesn't escape me either. She requested my presence, not him. I meet his eyes the same shade of gray as my own. "Tell her I'm sick, or hell, tell her I died."
"Don't test me, boy."
Oh, he's busting out the boy, huh? That's what he always called me right before his fists pummeled my gut, or smashed my face, or broke my nose for the 100th fucking time. "I'm not coming," I say coldly. "Deal with it." He moves in closer, his eyes gleaming beneath the low brim of his Bruins cap as his voice lowers to a hiss.
"Listen up, you ungrateful little shit. I don't ask much of you. In fact, I don't ask anything of you. I let you do whatever the fuck you want. I pay for your tuition, your books, your equipment."
The reminder makes my stomach seethe with anger. I keep a spreadsheet on my computer that documents everything he's ever paid for so that when I gain access to my trust, I'll know the precise amount to write on the check I plan on handing him before I tell him good riddance. But tuition for next term needs to be paid in December, the month before my trust comes in, and I don't have enough in my savings account to cover the full amount, which means I'm stuck being indebted to him for a little while longer.
"All I expect in return," he finishes, "is that you play like the champion you are, the champion I made you."
An ugly sneer twists his mouth.
"Well, it's time to pay up, son. You will come home for Thanksgiving. Understood?"
Our eyes lock. I could kill this man. If I knew I could get away with it, I would actually kill him.
"Understood."
I give a curt nod, and then I stalk away without looking back. Hannah waits for me near the bus, worry clouding her green eyes.
"Is everything okay?"
she asks quietly. I draw in a ragged breath. Yeah, it's fine.
Are you sure?
It's fine, babe, I promise.
Graham, get your ass on the bus.
Coach shouts from behind me. You're holding everyone up. Somehow I manage to force a smile. I've got to go. Maybe we can hang out tomorrow after my game?
Call me when you're done. I'll see where I'm at.
Sounds good. I drop a kiss on her cheek, then head for the bus where Coach is impatiently tapping his foot. He watches Hannah as she makes her way back to her friends, then shoots me a wry smile.
She's cute, girlfriend.
No idea, I confess.
Yeah, that's how it usually is with women. They hold all the cards and we're just clueless.
Coach slaps me on the arm.
Come on, kid, time to hustle.
I take my usual seat next to Logan near the front of the bus, and he gives me a funny look as I unzip my jacket and lean my head back.
What?
I mumble.
Nothing,
he says lightly. I've known the guy long enough to figure out that a nothing from Logan means something entirely different. But he pops in his iPod earbuds and proceeds to ignore me for most of the ride. It isn't until we're 10 minutes from Briar that he abruptly yanks out his earphones and turns to look at me.
Fuck it, he announces. I'm just gonna come out and say it.
Wariness circles my insides like a turkey vulture. I sincerely hope he's not about to confess that he has a thing for Hannah, because shit will get awkward real fast if he does. I glance around, but most of my teammates are either sleeping or listening to music. The seniors in the back are laughing at something Birdie has just said. Nobody is paying any attention to us. I lower my voice. What's up? He lets out a weary breath.
I debated saying anything at all, but fuck G. I don't like seeing anyone get played for a fool, especially my best friend. I figured I should wait until after the game, though.
He shrugs.
I didn't want you to be distracted on the ice.
What the hell are you talking about, man?
Dean and I ended up at Maxwell's house last night for his Halloween thing, Logan confesses. Cole was there and...
I narrow my eyes.
And what?
Logan looks so uncomfortable that my guard soars another 20 feet. He's never one to beat around the bush, which means shit must be serious.
He said he's going out with Wellesley this weekend.
My heart stops. Bullshit.
That's what I thought, but...
Another shrug.
He insisted it was true. I figured I should tell you about it, you know, just in case he's not talking out of his ass.
I swallow, my mind running a million miles a second. Bullshit continues to be my thought of choice, but a part of me isn't so sure. The whole reason Hannah is even in my life is because of fucking Cole. But she was interested in Cole. But that was before. Before she and I kissed. She still went to the party to see him after the kiss.
Right. I gulp again.
Well, it was after the kiss, but before everything else. The sex. The secrets we shared with each other. All the cuddling.
Told you cuddling was a mistake, dude.
My inner cynic wreaks havoc on my brain, bringing a rush of weariness to my chest.
No, Cole had to have been bullshitting. There's no way Hannah would agree to go out on a date with him without telling me.
Right?
Anyway, just thought you should know,
Logan says. It's damn difficult to speak past my tight as fuck throat, but I manage one mumble of a word.
Thanks.
Chapter 31. Hannah. Garrett texts me just as I'm getting ready for bed. Allie and I literally walked through the door 5 minutes ago, and I'm surprised to hear from him again tonight. I figured he'd crash the moment he got home from the game.
Him. Need to talk to you.
Me. Now? Him.
Yes.
Okay. It might be a text message, but it's hard not to extrapolate his tone. and his tone is most definitely pissed off. Me. Sure, call me.
Him. Actually, I'm at your door.
My head snaps toward my open doorway, half expecting to find him there. Then I feel silly because I realize he means the door to our dorm and not my bedroom. Still, this must be serious because Garrett doesn't usually show up unannounced. Queasiness eddies in my stomach as I walk past the common area to answer the door. Sure enough, Garrett is standing behind it, still wearing his hockey jacket and sweatpants as if he rushed right over instead of going home to change first. Hi, I greet him, gesturing for him to come inside. What's going on? He gazes past me at the empty living room.
Where's Allie?
She went to bed.
Can we talk in your room?
The queasiness gets worse. I can't decipher his expression at all. His eyes are shuttered, and his tone is completely devoid of emotion. Does this have something to do with his father? I couldn't hear their conversation earlier, but their body language had conveyed some serious aggression. I wonder if maybe they...
Are you going out with Justin this weekend?
Garrett voices the demand the moment I close my bedroom door, and I realize in dismay that this has nothing to do with his dad, and everything to do with me. Surprise and insta-guilt war inside me as I meet his eyes. Who told you that?
Logan, but he heard it from Cole.
Oh. Garrett doesn't move. He doesn't unzip his jacket. He doesn't even blink. He just keeps his eyes locked on mine.
Is it true?
I gulp. Yes and no. For the first time since he got here, his expression flashes with emotion. Annoyance.
What the hell does that mean?
It means he asked me out, but I haven't decided if I'm going or not.
Did you say you would?
There's a grim edge to his tone. Well, yes, but...
Garrett's eyes blaze. You actually said yes? When did he ask you?
Last week, I admit. The day after Beau's party. His face relaxes, just slightly.
So it was before Dean's thing, before you and I...
I nod.
Okay.
He takes a breath.
Okay. Not as bad as I thought.
But then his features turn to stone again and his nostrils flare.
Wait, what do you mean you haven't decided if you're going?
I give a helpless shrug.
You're not fucking going, Hannah.
His sharp voice makes me wince. Says who?
You?
Because last I checked, you and I aren't dating. We're just fooling around.
Is that what you really...
He stops, his mouth twisting in a scowl.
You know what? I guess you're right. I guess we're just fooling around.
I can barely keep up with the jumbled thoughts racing through my brain. You said you don't do girlfriends, I say weakly.
I said I don't have time for a girlfriend,
he shoots back.
But guess what? Priorities change.
I falter. So, you're saying you want me to be your girlfriend?
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm saying.
My teeth sink into my lower lip. Why?
Why what?
Why would you want that? I bite my lip harder. You're all one track about hockey, remember? And besides... We argue too much.
We don't argue. We bicker.
It's the same thing. He rolls his eyes.
No, it's not. Bickering is fun and good-natured. Arguing is...
Oh my God, we're arguing about the way we argue? I interrupt, unable to stop from laughing. Garrett's shoulders relax at the sound of my laughter. He takes a step toward me, searching my face.
I know you're into me, Wellesley, and I'm definitely into you. Would it really be so bad if we made this thing official?
I gulp again. I hate being put on the spot, and I'm too confused to make sense of anything right now. Acting on impulse isn't something I do often. I never make decisions without giving them careful thought, and although other girls might break out in cartwheels at the thought of making things official with Garrett Graham, I'm more pragmatic than that. I didn't expect to like this guy, or to have sex with him, or to be in the position where he might be my boyfriend. I don't know, I finally say. I mean, I didn't really think about you and me in terms of dating. I just wanted to... My cheeks grow warm. Explore the attraction and see if... You know, but I didn't think any farther ahead than that. My confusion triples, turning my mind to mush. I have no idea what this even is, or where it could go, or... As I trail off, I notice Garrett's expression, and the hurt in his eyes cuts into me like a knife.
You don't know what this is, or where it could go? Jesus, Hannah, if you...
He lets out a shaky breath, his broad shoulders sagging.
If you honestly don't know, then we're wasting our time. Because I know exactly what it is.
He halts so abruptly it gives me whiplash. You what? I whisper. He stops again. His gray eyes darken.
You know what? Forget it. I guess you're right. This was all about exploring the attraction.
He sounds increasingly bitter.
I'm just your sex therapist, right? Actually, no. I'm your fucking fluffer.
Fluffer? I say blankly.
Like in porn,
he mutters.
They bring in the fluffer to suck off the dudes between takes so they stay hard.
Anger colors his tone.
That was my job, right? To get you nice and hot for Cole. To get you ready to bone him.
Indignation prickles my skin. One, that's disgusting. And two, that's not fair and you know it.
I don't know a damn thing, apparently.
He asked me out before I slept with you, and I probably wasn't even going to go. Garrett barks out a harsh laugh.
You probably weren't going to? Yeah, thanks for that.
He takes a step to the door.
You know what? Just go on the damn date. You got what you wanted from me? I guess Justin can take it from here.
Garrett. But he's already gone. Not just gone, but making his exit known as he slams my door, thuds through the suite, and slams that door too. I stare at the empty space he was taking up a second ago.
I know exactly what it is.
Garrett's hoarse words echo in my head. And a vice of emotion constricts my heart because I'm pretty sure I know exactly what it is, too. And I'm scared that because of my split-second moment of indecision, I just threw it all away. Chapter 32. Garrett.
The temperature seems to have dropped 20 degrees from when I walked into Bristol House to when I stormed out of it. A frigid gust of wind blasts me in the face and chills the tips of my ears as I trudge toward the parking lot. See? This is why I avoid the whole girlfriend drama. I should be over the fucking moon tonight because the team crushed Harvard. Instead, I'm pissed off and frustrated and more upset than I expected to be. Hannah's right. We were just fooling around. Same way I was fooling around with Kendall or the chick before her. Or the chick before that. I didn't even bat an eye when I ended it with any of them, so why the hell am I so bummed right now? Thank fuck I got out of there, though. I had been seconds away from making a complete fool of myself, saying things I shouldn't be saying, maybe even begging. Jesus. If that's not a sign of some serious pussy whipping right there, then I don't know what is. I'm halfway to my Jeep when I hear Hannah call out my name. My chest clenches. I turn around and see her racing down the path from Bristol to the lot. She's still in her PJs, plaid pants and a black t-shirt with yellow music notes decaled on the front. I'm tempted to keep walking, but the sight of her bare arms and cold, flushed cheeks pisses me off even more than our fight had. Jesus Christ, Hannah, I mutter when she reaches me. You're gonna catch a cold.
That's a myth,
she shoots back.
Cold weather doesn't cause colds.
But she's visibly shivering, and when she wraps her arms around herself and starts rubbing her bare skin to keep warm, I rumble in annoyance and hurriedly unzip my jacket. Gritting my teeth, I drape the coat over her shoulders.
Here. Thanks.
She looks as annoyed as I feel.
What the hell is wrong with you, Garrett? You can't just storm off in the middle of a serious discussion.
There was nothing left to discuss.
Bullshit.
She angrily shakes her head.
You didn't even let me talk.
Yes, I did, I answer flatly. And trust me, you said plenty.
I can barely remember what I said. You know why? Because you totally caught me off guard and didn't even give me a second to think about it.
What's there to think about? You're either into me or you're not. Hannah makes a frustrated noise.
You're not being fair again. Just because you suddenly decide you're ready for a relationship and that we should be together doesn't mean that I'm going to squeal like a sorority girl and say, "Wee, yay!" You clearly had time to think about it and absorb it, but you didn't give me any time at all. You just barged in and made accusations and ran out.
I experience a pang of guilt. She has a point. I did come over tonight fully knowing what I wanted from her.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you about the Justin date,
she says quietly.
But I'm not going to apologize for needing more than 5 frickin' seconds to think about the possibility of you and me being a couple.
My breath comes out in a white puff that quickly gets carried away by the wind. I'm sorry I ran off, I concede. But I'm not sorry that I want to be with you. Those beautiful green eyes probe my face.
Do you still want that?
I nod. Then I gulp. Do you?
Depends.
She slants her head.
Will we be exclusive?
Fuck yeah, I say without hesitation. The thought of her seeing anyone else is like a machete to the gut.
Are you okay with taking it slow?
She shifts awkwardly.
Because with the showcase coming up and the holidays and exams and your game schedule, we'll both start to get busy, and I can't promise to see you every second of the day.
We see each other when we see each other, I say simply. I'm surprised by how calm I sound, how composed I'm staying when there's a herd of excited butterflies thumping in my stomach and shouting, "Hells yeah!" at top volume. Jeez, I'm about to complicate my life by inviting a girlfriend into it, yet somehow I'm 100% cool with that.
Then, okay.
Hannah smiles at me.
Let's make it official.
A dark cloud obscures some of my happiness. What about Justin?
What about him?
You told him you'd go out with him, I say through clenched teeth.
Actually, I canceled the date before I came out here.
The dumb butterflies inside me take flight again. You did? She nods. So you're not all hot for him anymore? Humor dances in her eyes.
I'm hot for you, Garrett. Only you.
Just like that, my anxiety dissolves into a burst of pure joy that brings a grin to my lips. Damn right you are. Rolling her eyes, she moves in and rubs her cold cheek against my chin.
Now can we please go inside? I'm freezing my butt off and I need my fluffer to warm me up.
I narrow my eyes. Excuse me? She blinks innocently.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say fluffer?
Her smile lights up her whole face.
I meant boyfriend.
Sweetest words I've ever heard in my life.
Chapter 33, Hannah. Life is good. Life is wonderfully, amazingly, scarily good. These past 2 weeks of dating Garrett have been a blur of laughter and cuddling and hot sex, intermingled with real-life events like classes and studying, rehearsals and hockey games. Garrett and I forged a connection that caught me by surprise. But even though Allie continues to tease me about my sudden about-face when it comes to the guy, I don't regret my decision to date him and see where things go. So far, it's been working out great. But see, here's the thing about life. When it's this good, something inevitably goes bad. I know this is an inconvenience, says Fiona, my performing arts advisor. But I'm afraid there's nothing I can do except advise you to speak directly to Mary Jane and... No way, I cut in, my stiff fingers curling around the arms of my chair. I stare at the pretty blonde woman across the desk and wonder how she can possibly describe this atom bomb of a disaster as an inconvenience. And she wants me to talk to Mary Jane? Fuck that. Because why the fuck would I talk to the stupid, brainwashed bitch who just ruined any chance I had of winning a scholarship? I'm still reeling from what Fiona told me. Mary Jane and Cass dumped me. They actually got permission to kick me out of the duet so that Cass can sing it as a solo. What the hell? Yet, in the back of my mind, I'm not even surprised. Garrett had warned me something like this could happen. I had worried about it myself, but never in a million years had I expected Cass to do this 4 weeks before the showcase, or that my advisor would be totally fucking cool with it. I grit my teeth. I'm not talking to Mary Jane. It's obvious she's made up her mind about this. Or rather, that Cass has made it up for her, when he'd cajoled her into speaking to our respective advisors and blubbering about how her composition is suffering in its duet form and that she's pulling it out of the showcase if it's not a solo. Of course, Cass had quickly pointed out that it would be egregious to waste a perfectly good song, and he'd graciously offered to let me sing it, at which point Mary Jane insisted that it should be sung by a male voice. Fuck you very much, MJ. So what am I supposed to do now? I ask in a tight voice. I don't have time to learn a new song and work with a new songwriter. No, you don't, Fiona agrees. Normally, I appreciate her no-nonsense approach, but today it makes me want to slug her. Which is why, given the circumstances, Cass's advisor and I agreed to bend the rules for you. You won't be teaming up with a composition major. We've agreed, and the faculty head signed off on it, that you can sing one of your own compositions. I know you have a lot of original songs in your repertoire, Hannah, and in fact, I think this is a great opportunity for you to showcase not just your voice, but your songwriting abilities. She pauses. However, you'll only be eligible to win the performance scholarship since composition isn't your major. My mind continues to spin like a carousel. Yes, there are a few originals I can sing, but none of them are even close to being performance ready. Why isn't Cass being penalized for this? I demand.
Look, I can't say I approve of what Cass and Mary Jane have done. But unfortunately, this is one of the drawbacks of duet work. Fiona sighs. Every year, there's at least one duet partnership that breaks down right before the showcase. Do you remember Joanna Maxwell? She graduated last year.
Beau's sister. I nod. Well, her duet partner bailed 3 days before the senior showcase, Fiona confides. I blink in surprise. Really? Oh, yeah. Let's just say it was pure chaos around here for those 3 days. My spirits lift just a bit when I remember that not only did Joanna win the scholarship, she also caught the eye of an agent who later got her that audition in New York. You don't need Cassidy Donovan, Hannah. Fiona's voice is firm, ringing with reassurance. You thrive as a solo performer. That's your strength. She gives me a pointed look. As I recall, that's exactly what I advised at the beginning of the term. Guilt warms up my cheeks. Yep, I can't deny it. She had told me her concerns about the project from the start, but I had allowed Cass to convince me that we would be a powerhouse together. You'll have whatever you need to prepare, she adds. We'll arrange the schedule so you'll have access to rehearsal space whenever you need it, and if you require accompaniment, any number of orchestra students can help you out. Is there anything else you think you might need? A tiny smile tugs on her lips. Trust me, Cass's advisor isn't happy about this either, so if there's something you want, tell me now, and I can probably make it happen for you. I'm about to shake my head, but then something occurs to me. Actually, there is something I want. I want Jay. I mean, Kim Jae-woo. Fiona furrows her brow. Who? The cellist. I stick out my chin in fortitude. I want the cellist. Garrett. I cannot believe he did that.
Allie sounds livid from her side of the booth, her blue eyes blazing as she looks up at Hannah. My girlfriend, where's that I'm trying really hard not to show how furious I am right now expression, but I can sense the volatile emotions radiating from her body. She smooths out the bottom of her apron.
Really? Because I can totally believe it, Hannah answers. I bet this was his plan all along. Drive me crazy for 2 months and then screw me over right before the show.
Fucking Cass,
Hannah's friend Dexter mutters from his seat next to Allie. Someone needs to give that boy a good ass kicking. Dex glances at Logan and me. Can't one of you hockey players do it? Rough him up a bit? Gladly, Logan says cheerfully. What's his address? I jab my friend in the side. We're not beating anybody up, jackass. Not unless you want to face coach's wrath and a suspension. I turn to Hannah with a rueful look. Don't worry. I'm beating him up in my head, baby. That counts, right? She laughs.
Sure, I'll allow it.
She tucks her order pad in her apron pocket.
I'll be right back.
As Hannah heads for the counter, I admire her ass for so long it gets me 3 loud snickers from my companions. And don't get me started on how weird it is to be sharing a booth with my best friend and Hannah's best friends. I was certain that Hannah's artsy friends would all be condescending and frigid around me, especially after she told me what they think about Briar's jock crowd. But I think my natural charm has won them over. Allie and Dex already treat me like we've been buds for years. Stella, who discovered her passion for hockey during the Harvard game, now texts me every other day to ask hockey questions. And while that dude Jeremy is still a bit snarky whenever I see him, his girlfriend Megan is pretty cool, so I'm willing to give him a few more chances to not be a dick.
She's pissed, Logan remarks as he watches Hannah chatting with the cook behind the pickup counter. She should be, replies Dex. Seriously, what kind of selfish douche-tard dumps his duet partner right before a show?
Logan snickers.
Douche-tard? I'm totally stealing that phrase.
She'll be fine, Allie says confidently. Hannah's originals are awesome. She doesn't need Cass.
No one needs Cass, Dex agrees. He's like the human being equivalent of syphilis.
As everyone laughs, I tune them out and focus my attention on Hannah. I can't help but remember the first time I came to Della's with the sole purpose of persuading Hannah to tutor me. It was only a little more than a month ago, yet I feel like I've known her forever. I don't know what I was thinking taking that whole anti-girlfriend position, because having a girlfriend fucking rocks. Seriously, I get to have sex whenever I want without having to work for it. I have someone to vent to after a shitty day or a devastating loss on the ice. I can make the worst jokes on the planet, and chances are Hannah will laugh at them. Oh, and I love being with her, plain and simple. Hannah returns to our booth carrying our drink orders, or rather, Allie and Dex's drink orders. Logan and I ask for sodas, but what we get is water.
Where's my Dr. Pepper, Wellesley?
Logan whines. She levels him with a stern look.
Do you know how much sugar is in a soft drink? A perfectly acceptable amount, and therefore I should drink it? Supplies Logan. Wrong. The answer is too damn much. You're playing Michigan in an hour. You can't get all hopped up on sugar before a game. You'll get a 5-minute energy boost and then crash halfway through the first period.
Logan sighs. Gee, why is your girl our nutritionist now? I pick up my water glass and take a sip of defeat. Do you want to argue with her? Logan looks at Hannah, whose expression clearly conveys, you'll get a soda over my dead body. Then he looks back at me.
No,
he says glumly.
Chapter 34, Hannah. My phone meows just after midnight, but I'm not asleep. In fact, I'm not even in my PJs yet. The second I came home after work, I grabbed my guitar and got right back to work again. Now that Cass has thrown a selfish, vindictive wrench into my life, things like sleep and relaxing and not panicking don't exist anymore. For the next month, I'm pretty much going to be a walking basket case unless I magically find a way to juggle school, work, Garrett, and singing without having a nervous breakdown. I put down the acoustic and check the screen. It's Garrett. Him.
Can't sleep. You up?
Me. Is this a booty call? Him.
No. Do you want it to be?
Me. No, I'm rehearsing, totally stressed. Him.
All the more reason for this to be a booty call.
Me. Keep it in your pants, dude. Why can't you sleep?
Him. Whole body hurts.
Sympathy flutters through my belly. Garrett had called earlier to say they'd lost the game, and apparently he'd taken some brutal hits tonight. Last time we talked, he was still icing his entire torso. I'm too lazy to type, so I dial his number, and he answers on the first ring. His husky voice slides into my ear.
Hey.
Hey. I lean back against my pillow. I'm sorry I can't come over and kiss all your boo-boos, but I'm working on this song.
It's okay. There's only one boo-boo I want you to kiss, and you sound too distracted for that.
He pauses.
I'm talking about my dick, by the way.
I choke down a laugh. Yep, I got that. No need to clarify.
Did you decide which song you're going to sing?
I think so. It's the one I sang to you last month when we were studying. Do you remember it?
Yeah, it was sad.
Sad is good. Packs more of an emotional punch. I hesitate. I forgot to ask you earlier. Was your dad at the game?
A pause. He never misses one.
Did he bring up Thanksgiving again?
No, thank fuck. He doesn't even look at me when we lose, so I wasn't expecting him to be chatty.
Garrett's voice is thick with bitterness, and then I hear him clear his throat.
Put me on speakerphone. I want to hear you sing.
My heart squeezes with emotion, but I try to hide the response by donning a casual tone. You want me to sing you a lullaby? Aren't you precious? He chuckles.
My chest feels like it got hit by a truck. I need a distraction.
Fine. I hit the speaker button and reach for my guitar. Feel free to hang up if you get bored.
Baby, I could watch you watching paint dry and I still wouldn't be bored.
Garrett Graham, my own personal sweet talker. I settle the acoustic on my lap and sing the song from the top. My door is closed, and although the walls in the dorm are paper thin, I'm not worried about waking Allie. The first thing I did after Fiona told me about the duet was give Allie a pair of earplugs and warn her that I'm going to be singing late into the night until the showcase. Weirdly enough, I'm not angry anymore. I'm relieved. Cass had turned our duet into the kind of flashy jazz hands performance that I despise, so as infuriating as it is to get dumped, I've decided I'm better off not having to sing with him. I run through the song three times, until my voice goes hoarse and I finally have to stop to chug the bottle of water on my nightstand.
Still here, you know.
Garrett's voice startles me. Then I laugh, because I honestly forgot he was on the line. I couldn't put you to sleep, huh? I don't know if I should be flattered or insulted.
Flattered. Your voice gives me chills, makes it impossible to fall asleep.
I smile, even though he can't see me. I need to figure out what to do about that last chorus, and high or low on the last note. Ooh, and maybe I should switch up the middle section too. You know what? I have an idea. I'm hanging up now so I can figure it out, and you need to go to sleep. Night, dude.
Wellesley, wait.
He says before I can hang up. I take the phone off speaker and bring it to my ear. What's up? I'm greeted by the longest pause ever. Garrett, you there?
Yeah, sorry. Still here.
A heavy breath reverberates through the line.
Will you come home with me for Thanksgiving?
I freeze. Are you serious? Another pause, even longer than the first. I almost expect him to rescind the invitation. And I don't think I'd be upset if he did. Knowing what I do about Garrett's father, I'm not sure if I can sit across a dinner table from that man without reaching over to strangle him. What kind of man hits his own son? His 12-year-old son?
I can't go back there alone, Hannah. Will you come?
His voice cracks on those last words, and so does my heart. I let out a shaky breath and say, "Of course I will." Chapter 35, Hannah. Garrett's father's house is not the mansion I expected it to be, but a brownstone in Beacon Hill, which I suppose is Boston's equivalent of mansion living. The area is gorgeous, though. I've been to Boston several times, but never to this ritzy part of it. And I can't help but admire the beautiful 19th century row houses, brick sidewalks, and quaint gas lamps lining the narrow streets. Garrett barely said a word during the 2-hour drive into the city. Tension has been rolling off his suit-clad body in steady, palpable waves, which has only succeeded in making me even more nervous. And yes, I said suit-clad, because he's wearing black trousers, a crisp, white dress shirt, and a black jacket and tie. The expensive material fits his muscular body like a dream, and even the perma-scowl on his face doesn't take away from his sheer hotness. Apparently, his father demanded he wear a suit, and when Phil Graham found out his son was bringing a date, he requested that I also dress formally, hence my fancy blue dress, which I wore to last year's spring showcase. The silky material falls to my knees, and I paired it with 4-inch silver heels that made Garrett grin when he showed up at my door as he informed me that he might now actually be able to kiss me standing up without getting a crick in his neck. We're greeted at the front doors not by Garrett's dad, but by a pretty blonde in a red cocktail gown that flutters around her ankles. She's also wearing a lacy black overlay with full sleeves, which I find odd because it's like a million degrees inside the house. Seriously, it's hot in here, and I waste no time shrugging out of my peacoat in the elegant parlor. Garrett, the woman says warmly, it's wonderful to finally meet you. She appears to be in her mid-30s, but it's hard to judge because she's got what I like to call old eyes, those deep, wise eyes that reveal a person has lived through several lifetimes already. I'm not sure why I get that sense. Nothing about her elegant outfit or perfect smile hints that she's seen hard times, but the trauma survivor in me immediately feels an odd kinship with her. Garrett answers in a brusque but polite voice,
It's nice to meet you, too.
He lets that hang, and her pale blue eyes flicker with unhappiness, as if she's realized that Garrett's father hadn't told his son the name of the woman he was dating. Her smile falters for a beat before steadying. Cindy, she fills in, and you must be Garrett's girlfriend. Hannah, I supply, leaning in to shake her hand. It's a pleasure to meet you. Your father is in the sitting room, she tells Garrett. He's very excited to see you. Neither Cindy nor I miss the sardonic snort that sounds from Garrett's direction. I squeeze his hand in a silent warning to be nice, all the while wondering what she means by sitting room. I always assumed that sitting rooms were where rich people gathered around to drink their sherry or brandy before sauntering into their 30-seat dining rooms. But the interior of the brownstone is a lot larger than it looks from the outside. We walk past two rooms, a living room and yet another living room, before we reach the sitting room, which looks like another living room. I think about my parents' cozy split level in Ransom and how that measly three-bedroom house has nearly bankrupted them, and it brings a rush of sorrow. It doesn't seem fair that a man like Phil Graham should have all these rooms and the money to furnish them, while good people like my parents are working so hard to keep their roof over their heads. When we walk in, Garrett's dad is in a brown wingback chair, balancing a tumbler of amber liquid on his knee. Like Garrett, he's wearing a suit, and the resemblance between them is jarring. They have the same gray eyes, the same strong jaw and chiseled face. But Phil's features seem sharper, and he has wrinkles around his mouth, as if he scowled one too many times and his muscles froze in that position. Phil, this is Hannah, Cindy says cheerily as she settles on the plush love seat next to Phil's chair. It's nice to meet you, Mr. Graham, I say politely. He nods at me. That's it, a nod. I have no idea what to say after that, and my palm goes clammy in Garrett's hand. Have a seat, you two. Cindy gestures to the leather sofa near the electric fireplace. I sit. Garrett remains standing. He doesn't say a word to his father, or to Cindy, or to me. Oh, fuck. If he's planning on keeping up this silent routine all night, then we're in for one long and awkward Thanksgiving. Absolute silence stretches between the four of us. I rub my damp hands on my knees and try to smile, but I feel like it might actually be a grimace. So, no football? I say lightly, glancing at the flat screen mounted on the wall. I thought that was a Thanksgiving tradition. God knows it's all my family does when we go to Aunt Nicole's for the holiday. My Uncle Mark is a rabid football fan, and even though the rest of us prefer hockey, we still have a good time watching the all-day game fest on TV. Garrett, however, refused to show up any earlier than he had to, so the afternoon games have already been won and lost. I'm pretty sure the Dallas game is just starting.